Hi folks, welcome to episode 6 of the Epochs of the Lotus Eaters. I'm joined by Bo, and today we're going to follow up on what happened after the Athenian disaster in Sicily that we covered in episode 5. I figure we'd just polish off what happened in the Peloponnesian War, just to, so we don't leave you on a cliffhanger, really. How did Athens cope with this massive disaster? And the answer is not very well, actually. This was better than could be expected, actually, I suppose. But basically, the Athenians, when they finally get word of this, after hanging a man for claiming that it happened and they didn't believe him, they were finally convinced. And I've got a quote from Thucydides here that I guess we'll believe begin with. They're furious because it was grievous enough for the state and for every man in his proper person to lose so many heavy infantry, cavalry, and able-bodied troops and see none left to replace them. But then when they saw also that they had not sufficient ships in their docks or money in the treasury or crews for the ships, they began to despair of salvation. Pretty bad stuff in Athens then.
Yeah, it's a low ebb, sure, isn't it? I mean, huge. Really low ebb. I mean, it's one of those, I think before I talked about Battle of Britain time, you know, it's, everything's on the line. And what if you lose that? Or if you, if the Russians had lost Stalingrad or something, you know, it's like, okay, there's not really anything standing between us and the enemy.
Which is incidentally exactly what the Athenians expected next. They thought the Syracusans were going to come and attack them alongside the Spartans and the Corinthians, and they were, quote, determined to resist to the last. And I always found this really interesting, is the fortitude of the Athenians, because, like, why?
Why continue?
Yeah.
You mean, yeah.
I mean, I just don't understand it, because at multiple points during the war, and it always comes after an Athenian victory, the Spartans send a delegation to Athens and say, can we have peace now? And the Athenians always say no. It's always the Athenians saying no. And so I just don't understand. Like, what are you doing?
Well, it's like when you talk about Rome, why do they never give in, seemingly? Yeah. Or why did the Germans, World War II, fight to the last man, to the last street? Why? I mean, why, when a boxer's been knocked down 5 times in a fight and he's clearly punch drunk, but he makes the 10 count, he's going to get knocked out in about 4 seconds flat. Why does he go, yeah, I'm okay? Why? I don't know. There's something deep down in people that don't want to give up, I think.
I agree, but, like, what are the Athenians really fighting for? That's the thing. Because it's not like the Spartans are even saying, like, surrender your city. They're saying, we would like peace. So the Athenians will keep their sovereignty, you know, because if they're fighting not to become the slaves of the Spartans, fair enough. But that's not what the issue is. The issue is who's going to become the most dominant power in Greece. And the Athenians are like, we don't care how much this costs us. I mean, they melt down, like, these giant gold statues of Nike and things like this. So they start, you know, it's like selling the family silverware, effectively, to pay for the war. It's like, you don't have to fight this war. Alcibiades restarted the war after you had a nice long peace. The Spartans don't want to fight. No one wants to fight. It's all on you. But the Athenians are like, no, we're committed now. It's tradition. We're here for the fight. And it's like, okay, well, fair enough.
Maybe it is a bit of pride, though. You know,
like, absolutely.
Because when you look back at, say, I don't know, World War One, for example, a lot of historians look back on that and say, some say it's a poor decision for Britain to have got involved. Should have just let the Germans steamroll the French, have nothing to do with us. Why did we get involved? Why did we spend all the treasure of an empire almost on that war? Why? Just because, well, I don't know.
Seemed like the right thing to do, politics. I suppose. Yeah.
Plus, there is also the thing you said, the thing you didn't say that I think maybe is an important factor is that there's obviously the rivalry between just the city-states of Sparta and Athens, but there's also between a democratic and an oligarchic system of government.
Yeah.
So I think that's also a thing that's playing out as well a lot of the time. I mean, it does get mentioned a fair bit.
Yeah, I suspect that it is the principle of democracy that underpins a lot of it, but it doesn't come through when I'm reading the material. That's the thing. What really comes through when I'm reading the material is just the obstinacy of the Athenians and their kind of own vainglorious view of themselves. You know, no, we're Athens, we're great, even though we keep losing, but we're still great, shut up. And, you know, so anyway, let's whiz over to Sparta and see what Alcibiades is doing.
Right, yeah, so Alcibiades, as we mentioned in the last one, didn't we, that they tried to put him on trial for the desecration of the Hermia, but then let him go on the expedition, then recalled him.
Yes.
But he didn't want to be recalled because he knew it was going to be a show trial.
Yeah.
And so there's one bit where he tries to actually hide from the delegation, which is kind of un-Alcibiades, really, to hide. But he tries to hide from them, and eventually they find him and they say, you know, what have you got to hide? And he says, you know, I just don't trust it, to be fair, basically, he says, I wouldn't trust my own mother to put in the right black or white token for voting token, a shard. He's no, apart from anything else, he's no fool. He knows what was coming because in absentia, he's sentenced to death and all his property confiscated and his name condemned by the priests and things, all that. Yep. So it's as hard as they can go for him.
Yeah.
And he must have known that that was what, that was the deal. That's what he was staring down the barrel of. So he's like, I'm not going home.
When
he goes to Sparta.
When you're as an extreme person as Alcibiades, I think you kind of assume the worst when it comes to like, that when things start collapsing, you're like, right, this is going to be really bad. Got to get out of here.
Well, his political enemy is not playing around.
No.
There's a bit, fair few years later, and it's only a few lines in Plutarch, but it just says, multiple political actors have been assassinated over the last year or so.
Yeah.
Like, okay, so that's a really, really intense political situation, really intense.
And there are loads of people who'd love to assassinate Alcibiades.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Well, there's a quote there just under, where it's just start under pick six.
Yeah, yeah. And now he decided to renounce his country altogether. So he sent word to the Spartans asking for asylum and promising that he would render them services greater than all the harm he had done to them when he was their enemy. The Spartans granted him this request and received him. And this is where he then explains to the Spartans, look, you need to do this, 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 and this to ruin Athens. And that's what they do. I mean, this is, I assume, during over a winter, during the sort of after the campaigning season's over. But the following year, King Agis does send out, he personally goes with the delegation to Decelea to fortify it, which is on Alcibiades' advice. Yeah. And wasn't it, is it Thucydides or Plutarch say that this, as you say, him, in fact, it was this more than any other single action that wore down the resources of Athens and finally ruined her. You know, so even though Thucydides and Plutarch don't actually put the defeat of Athens on Alcibiades' shoulders, Thucydides says that all the major decisions were made by people other than Alcibiades because of the abrasive personality of Alcibiades. All the decisions are given to other people. But I mean, it seems that he did have some impact.
I mean, two quick thing just to mention there is the line where it says the Spartans granted him his request and received him, and then no more said about it. But that's quite a big thing. We mentioned it the other time as well. Like, why did they do that? It doesn't. Well, anyway, we could dwell on that for a while, but it's just a little bit odd to me. Well, they know his skills, I suppose.
Yeah.
But he has been sort of one of their deadliest enemies.
But he's also, I think there are like rules of formality there. And to be honest with you, if he's going to be one of your deadliest enemies, better he's right there where you can see him than somewhere else causing you trouble.
I mean, that's a good rationale, but I mean, you could also argue it's better he's in the ground.
Well, I'm amazed that they didn't, frankly.
Yeah, right. I mean, yeah, when you look back at it with 2020, you think as if, again, if it were a game, you just think, well, get rid of him.
Yeah, absolutely.
But yeah, it just seems, well, his personality is so massive.
Yeah, but Alcibiades lives with the Spartans for like a year or something, doesn't he?
Yeah, quite a while. Yeah. And it seems, and we said in the other one as well, I can never really forgive him for that. It seems the Athenians themselves in his lifetime did, or most of them,
I can forgive him. I mean, he was condemned to death in absentia. I can forgive him.
And one of the things is, you said as well, I think he's quite chameleon-like. He's just very, just very personable wherever he goes.
Yeah.
There's a bit in Plutarch that says, he says it's a spell.
Yeah,
that he casts over people wherever he goes. So when he's in Sparta, he dresses like a Spartan, lets his hair grow long because that's a Spartan thing. You let your hair grow long.
Yeah,
it's all from Lycurgus, I think. And he will take cold baths, which is what they do.
The black broth.
Yeah, the famous black broth.
God.
And just live a Spartan life.
Yeah, but like they couldn't believe that he'd ever been a perfumed Athenian noble. And then when he goes up to the Persians, he acts like a Persian. Then when he goes to Thessaly, he's always riding horses. And so you are right. He's got this remarkable ability to make the people around him like him and trust him, which, I mean, he must have had a staggering personality to do
that. That's in the mold of a modern politician a bit, don't you think? Someone like David Cameron, Teflon Dave, or Tony Blair, they'll just say whatever they need to do or say at any given instance. Whereas, you know, you've got other people who've got a very, very, very strong personality, and it's the same in all contexts. They're rarer, those type of people, I think.
I don't think I'd consider Alcibiades like a modern politician because he actually has content in his speeches. Like, he's not just giving the sort of public relations spiel to each leader that he meets to try and be nothing. He tries to be something. So he becomes a Spartan. He becomes a Persian. And he doesn't ever give them empty advice or give them empty words. He always gives them some real content to what he's saying. So I don't think I would compare him to a modern politician. It seems that he was just had a very powerful personality.
I suppose there's one other episode which happens while he's at Sparta to do with the king or to do with the queen.
Well, that's the thing. He persuades Agis to go and fortify Decalea, and Thucydides tells us he does set off to fortify Decalea, instructs the allies to build like 100 ships, raise troops and money. So the Spartans, after the Athenian defeat, are like, right, okay, we're at full war now, let's do this. Let's go out and win, finally, I suppose. And while Agis is away, Alcibiades is, we're told he seduces the queen. And we're told he does this not because of any particular desire of her, but because he wanted, quote, his race to rule over the Spartans, as in his progeny, his children, to be the kings of the Spartans. But the problem is that Agis hadn't had relations with his wife for something like 10 months. And so when the child's born, Agis was like, well, the dates just don't match up. It's not my child. And the child does not become the heir apparent to the throne or one of the thrones of Sparta. So that fails.
He refuses to acknowledge him, doesn't he? When he grows up.
He does. And this is not good for Alcibiades.
Timia, I think the queen's name was. Mm. And she didn't, she apparently didn't attempt to deny the fact. So completely, quote, so completely was she carried away by her passion for him.
Yes.
So, well, that's strong, isn't it? That's very strong.
Bloody strong.
Emotion.
You just cuck the king of Sparta. And she's like, yeah, Alcibiades is so great. And it's like, God damn it.
To watch the full video, please become a premium member at lotuseaters.com.